Okay, well, I've been told this, that we have a few microphones around here, so if you make any comments or ask any questions, if you can speak up more than normally. As Becca says, my name is Naomi Woods, and I'm going to talk to you today about password psychology, memory, behaviour and security. So, to start, I'm going to answer a few questions. What is psychology, and how is psychology relevant to password security and information system security? Excuse me. Well, psychology is the discipline that's involved with the scientific study of mental functions and behaviours. What psychologists attempt to understand is mental functions and how they're involved with individual and social behaviours. They also attempt to understand the physiological and the biological factors that underlie cognitive functioning and behaviour. So how is this relevant to password security? Well, basically, for a password to be successful, it has to provide security. And so the user has to memorise the password, keep the password secret, and also make it unguessable. So what's involved there is cognitive functioning, or specifically memory, and behaviour. So how does this fit with information system security? Well, our passwords, they protect our data and they protect our computer systems, and ensuring their security is paramount. But within information systems research, we keep on getting reminded that humans are the weakest link in security. So what psychology does is provides an understanding of human cognition and behaviours to explain the balance between memory, security and convenience. So today I'm going to very briefly tell you my personal research motivations and a little bit about me. I'm then going to discuss with you password security, a brief introduction looking at the security threat and also the worldwide context. We're then going to look at password alternatives, what makes a password strong, the password problem, password security behaviour, and we're going to look at poor password security behaviour here and why we do it. Then we'll move on to security knowledge and understanding, the human memory, the effects of human memory on password selection, what makes passwords more memorable. So we'll look at the research here and the different types of passwords, the research methodology involved in this type of research, and also the future of making passwords more secure. So, a little about me. I have an undergraduate degree from London in psychology. I've also got a master's in clinical psychology. My research focus was on clinical and cognitive neuropsychology. As part of my research, I looked at traumatic brain injury patients and also cognitive impairments. I have previous experience working in international banking, working in fraud and security departments, working with sensitive data and helping to develop security policies, and I also help train train employees and make them aware of security issues. I also have worked as a research assistant for the British government, and I've worked on a number of projects there and also within universities. So all of that has led me to where I am now, and that's I'm doing a current PhD in cognitive science, and my research focus is on memory, password security, and information system security. But I'm currently working on a project at the moment in human behaviour and password login systems. So my motivations for researching this topic is that it utilises my knowledge, skills and experience gained through working and studying psychology and cognitive neuropsychology and cognitive science. Also, working in banking with fraud and security and working as a research assistant. I enjoy applying psychological theories to try and solve real-world issues, and I like to contribute to knowledge, not only just in information systems, but also within the community and the wider society, so to say. So, enough about me. Let's talk about password security. So, in the past few years, computers have become an essential part of our lives, both in the home and in the workplace, with over 2 billion users accessing the internet alone in 2012. With a rise in internet usage, social networking and e-commerce, passwords have become an essential mechanism for ensuring the security of our personal and organisational communications, data and finance. With access to a global network, our computers have become potentially vulnerable to security breaches such as emails carrying viruses and also data theft if security procedures are not followed. However, even with internet security and firewalls, passwords are still vulnerable to attacks from hackers, crackers, scammers and spammers. So, with all this research, with all this internet security, why is password security still an issue? Well, Schneierin in 2006 noted that even though passwords are stronger than they were 15 years ago, the technology is still a lot more advanced. But what it all comes down to is that, and this, as I've said before, information systems research keep on highlighting this, is that humans are the weakest link in security here. So add to the fact that nowadays, with the rise in internet usage, that we have a multiple of passwords to remember, it brings into the whole question the ultimate security of passwords and the future of the mechanism as we try and push our memories to their capacity. So, what's the alternative? Well, I'm going to just discuss a few of these. One of them is a single sign-on technology. Basically, in brief, you sign into the system and it will allow you to access a number of systems and sites that are password verified. The advantages with this is that you only have to remember one password. It's less time consuming. And also it reduces costs for resetting your password. The disadvantages are that it's a single administration trusted by all principals. It's a single point of failure. So if one thing goes down, it all goes down. And it's a single point of vulnerability for attacks. Another alternative to passwords is, and there's various forms of these, is security tokens, or, for example, smart cards here. One is the PIN-protected memory card. Basically, you enter a PIN and you get a password. Another one is a cryptographic challenge response card. Now, it's a cryptographic key in memory. The computer creates a random challenge. You enter the PIN and it encrypts or decrypts the challenge. Another one is cryptographic calculators or readerless smart cards. Apparently you stimulate the smart card and then it gives you an encrypted result. The advantages of these is that encryption is considered more strong and more secure. But the disadvantages are that if you say had your device lost or it was stolen or it was broken, not only is it a security issue, but it's also an inconvenience issue. Also, you have to remember, if you have many of these devices, which one belongs to which system or account. Another issue is that it's vulnerable to man-in-the-middle phishing attacks. Now, what that is that it's when an attacker eavesdrops on information and communication being relayed and poses to the victim as the end point to gain trust and information. Now, with advances in technology and digital devices in recent years, other methods are being suggested as alternatives to passwords, and biometrics is one of them. Biometrics is your personal characteristics, so say your face, your iris, your fingerprints, your voice and your keyboard typing time. It's all personal characteristics, and the advantages are for this is that it cannot be forgotten or disclosed or lost. The disadvantages, and unfortunately there are many, is that the cost of installation and maintenance. But secondly, it has reliability issues, as biometric technology can allow access to unauthorized persons and also disallow access to authorized persons. I remember a few years ago I lived in Germany and I had we had a 24-hour video store, or DVD store nowadays, isn't it? But DVD store, and it had a fingerprint technology to access your accounts, and most of the time it was absolutely perfect. But every so often it just didn't allow you to access your account. Maybe you had a cut on your finger, or I don't know, you maybe not pressed hard enough, whatever it was. But it was incredibly frustrating. And that's just with a DVD store. So if you can imagine, if it was in charge of your banking or your shopping, or even in the military, even more highly secure secrets, it could be an incredible inconvenience and problem. Another issue that's with biometrics is that if your information, your personal characteristics are falsified or stolen, first of all, how do you prevent someone else using them? But also, how do you carry on using your own personal characteristics when someone's already stolen them? Apparently, a few months ago, there was an article in a newspaper about people in the Dominican Republic. Apparently, some people were having their fingerprints altered or removed to avoid detection from the police. So it shows that this is still not a reliable alternative, at least to passwords. Alan Woodward from Charterist commented last year on Google's face recognition passwords as there's a long way between writing a patent about an idea and delivering it as a reliable security measure. I would expect people will still use traditional passwords for some time to come. Well, in 2007 and 2009, the Computer Security Institute conducted surveys into between 400 and 500 US companies. And they found that biometric technologies were 18% of the companies were using biometric technologies, and this rose to 2009 to 26%. Smart card one-time tokens, they reduced across those 2 years from 35% to 33%. But passwords and passwords based authentication stayed the same across both years at about 50%. So given that passwords are here to stay for at least the time being, exploring how to make them more secure is imperative to the future of security. So, what constitutes as a strong password? Can anyone suggest here what they think makes a strong password? Does anyone want to make a suggestion? Please.
Mix of uppercase characters, lowercase characters, special characters, numbers, and that's about it.
Sounds about right. Excellent. Does anyone want to add to that?
Long sentences?
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Do you mean long sentences as the whole words? Right, okay, we're going to talk about that in a few minutes, okay? What makes a password strong? Policies can differ from all the time, but what they normally enforce are length, complexity, and expiration period. And our friend over there has obviously mentioned most of these on my side, but I'll go through them again anyway. But Microsoft provides a password checker on their website, and they suggest length, more than 8 characters long, complexity to include letters, punctuation, symbols, and numbers. and variation to change as often to regularly change your passwords. They suggest setting a reminder at 3 months. And variety, to use different unique passwords for every single account. Well, the big password problem can be divided into two, a contextual issue and a user issue. Now, the contextual issue places demands on the user, and they can consist of time. So the time to create or remember or type in your password, money, the cost it takes to reset your password, or if you have lost your password or forgotten your password, the money lost to the inconvenience of maybe not accessing some money. The fear of forgetting your password and the consequences of that. Self-efficacy. Now, that is the user's perception of their abilities to provide security for their information. And personal goals, where leisure and work take preference over security goals. Now, those are some of the contextual issues that affect the user, but the user has his or her own issues to deal with. A user has to create, encode, and recall distinctly different passwords for many accounts. This is incredibly demanding, and more often than not, users tend to reuse their passwords or modify them or write them down as coping mechanisms for cognitive offloading. So research has shown that the public are very negligent towards their password security behaviour. What would it take for you to reveal your password to me? I mean, would anyone like to suggest anything? I mean, money. Is there a level of money that you would reveal your password for? Does anyone want to suggest any? No? I couldn't possibly put a price on my own, but I have known from other lectures that people would actually give it away for quite a low amount of money. But a study by the BBC in 2010 found that 70% of the public would reveal their password for. Does anyone want to have a guess? No? Chocolate. Which is utterly crazy. But anyway, but 70% of the public. So what are the big bad password behaviours? What are the big no-nos here? So, don't write your password down on a post-it note and stick it to your computer. It's just not very good practice. Sharing your password with colleagues or friends or even your boss, especially if you're going on holiday. If your boss needs to access your accounts while you're away on holiday, then they can actually get authorization through the proper channels. Don't store your passwords on an insecure document on your computer. It's just a hacker's delight. And don't use weak passwords, and don't reuse and modify your passwords. Again, it's not very good practice, but we're going to discuss this in a few minutes. So these behaviours violate IS security policies and bring about personal and organisational risks, security risks. To attempt to improve these behaviours and to reduce them, guidance and advice and training are given on websites when creating passwords, but also within corporations. And to try and understand and reduce these violations, information systems research have examined the password itself, security behaviour towards the password and the information in which it's securing, understanding memory for passwords, and the effects of password policies and guidance. So, why do we adopt poor password behaviour? Well, the protection motivation theory, or PMT, is one theory that is able to explain poor password behaviour. It's a prominent theory proposed by Rogers in 1983, and it predicts an individual's intentions to engage in protective actions. There are two factors of this, or excuse me, there are two factors of protection motivation. Threat appraisal, which is the individual's perception of the level of danger or threat, and also coping appraisal, which is the individual's perception of their own ability to cope or avert a danger or threat. Here I have a nifty little diagram. We've got threat and coping appraisal, and we have the sub-factors that are underneath it, which I'll describe in a minute. The compliance behaviour and then the behaviour action. So, under threat appraisal, there is perceived vulnerability and perceived severity. Now, perceived vulnerability is the individual's perception of the probability that they're going to be attacked. So, for instance, in terms of passwords, let's think. If you don't think that your information that you're in, like say your email, isn't that important, no one would want to know my information in my email, you may not create a strong password for that because you feel that no one's going to attack you. Perceived severity, now that is the perception of the consequences of an attack. So, for instance, you may not fully understand the consequences of say, your personal information being stolen. So, again, you may not create a strong password because you don't have that understanding. Under coping appraisal, there's self-efficacy, which is the individual's perception of their ability to cope or avert an action and put into action the correct behaviour to avert it. So, for instance, if you've got many passwords, you may think to yourself, oh, I've got way too many passwords, my memory can't cope, so I'm just going to use a weak password for all of them, or reuse them. Response efficacy is the user's perception of the effectiveness of their responding to a threat. So, and response cost is the user's perception of the cost of responding to a threat. So, for instance, is it really worth it putting all this effort into creating a password? Is it really worth doing it? Is the cost of it, not just monetary, but effort and many other things, is it really worth having this security good security behaviour? But previous research has surmised that there are two significant factors involved that lead to poor password behaviour, and that is user's knowledge and understanding and the user's memory. Now, they both affect user's password behaviour, but also user's knowledge and understanding affects the memory as well through motivation. So, for instance, if a person doesn't feel, again, that their information is worth securing, they may not be motivated to really learn their passwords. So that's the dynamic for this. So under user knowledge and understanding, researchers suggest that lax security behaviour can be attributed to a lack of understanding and a lack of knowledge of the sensitivity and importance of the data in which you're securing. It can also be attributed to a lack of understanding and knowledge of security itself. So not understanding the importance and sensitivity of your data, again, if you feel that, I don't know, you don't realise how important the information you're securing is, say you think, oh, my information in my email, it's not that important. You may not realise that you may be attacked anyway. And regarding security, not understanding security, people may not understand, for instance, how cracking works. And so therefore, because they don't understand it, they may actually be thinking that they've created a secure password when actually they haven't. Has been brought about by, has arisen from the possible lack of training or education or just security awareness. But also, it can be attributed to a lack of a personal experience in an unpleasant security breach. So a personal experience, or maybe through hearsay. I mean, has anyone here had their emails hacked? Well, I have. And when I had my email hacked, I decided to change my password. Therefore, I adopted a different behaviour. I also not only just changed my password, but I made a more secure password. So that is how my change, my behaviour changed due to an unpleasant experience. Going back to that survey in 2009 by the Computer Security Institute, what they found was that 46% of US companies provide additional security awareness and training after a security breach. Now, that doesn't sound very high, but when you look at the results and statistics involved in this, it was ranked second highest on actions taken after a security breach, which was actually higher than replacing the security systems and computer software. So within organisations, humans are still considered to be the weakest link in security. In our heavily networked world, cyber attacks present a 24/7, 365 threat. Password cracking is recovering passwords from information stored on a computer system or while it's being transmitted. The purpose is to gain access to unauthorized systems and to steal information and data. Common approach to cracking is a brute force attack, which is just repeatedly guessing passwords. And an example of this is dictionary attacks. The ability to crack a password is down to time. So it's how many passwords you can crack within a second. So if you have a longer password, it takes a longer time to crack. And also another issue when it comes to cracking is that if you have an easy password, it's quite often easier to guess. And if you have a harder password to remember, quite often it's going to be harder to crack. So it's down to the complexity of the password and also the length of the password. So let's have a look at some numbers. This is an example of a dictionary attack. So I'm going to use 1 million passwords at 6 characters long. I'm going to compare the different times it takes to crack those million passwords for two different types of password. So for a typical dictionary password, which includes people's names, pet names, common words, or just ordinary words, how long do you think it takes to crack a million passwords? Does anyone want to hazard a guess? Go on, I'm sure you could just have one guess.
6 seconds.
6 seconds, well, that is very, very good, but not quite. But basically, dictionary attacks can guess over 100,000 passwords a second. But for a million passwords, it would take 28 hours and 14 hours offline, which is not 6 seconds, but it's still pretty damn quick. But when you compare it to, say, random passwords, now this is upper and lower case letters, digits, and special characters. Can anyone guess how long it would take to crack a million passwords like that? Okay. Take over 1,000 years. So in comparison, you can see how important it is to use a more random password. So to summarise user knowledge and understanding, the research has suggested that poor password behaviour can be attributed to lack of understanding of the sensitivity and importance of the data that you're protecting, and also due to a lack of understanding and knowledge of security. However, it seems that users are still more concerned with remembering their passwords than securing them. So this brings us on to user memory. If you bear with me. Right. Although there are different factors involved that affect different that affect password behaviour, the password problem is still considered to be a memory problem. The human memory is thought to comprise of more than one storage system. And when you compare it to a computer system, the memory is the human memory is required to encode information, store information, and retrieve stored information. The stages of memory theory proposed by Aitkinson and Shiffrin back in 68 is still considered to be one of the most influential multi-storage models, identifying three distinct memory stores. You have sensory memory, the short-term memory, and the long-term memory. Now, in terms of passwords, the sensory memory is involved with receiving or observing the password. The short-term memory is involved with learning the password through rehearsal. And the long-term memory is involved with storing the password and eventually recalling it. Now, there's been several memory phenomena that has been discussed in information and also password security research. The generation effect is one of them. Now, that is basically a phenomena that you have a better memory for information that you have created in your head rather than information that is just merely presented to you. So in terms of passwords, you remember the passwords better if you create them rather than if someone just gives you a password. Depth of processing and meaning. Now, this is proposed by Craik and Lockhart in 72, and they believed that information was processed on many different levels. An example of this is, say, the word apple. I don't know if everyone can see that from here. Now, when you consider the word apple, you consider it on a visual level. You consider the word, and you consider the print of the letter, the letters, and how the word is formed. You then consider how the word sounds, so apple, or maybe how the apple would sound if you took a bite out of it. You then consider the word apple as the image. So we've got an image of an apple here. Then the meaning of the word is contemplated in general terms. This is an apple. An apple is a fruit. And also in personal terms. So say, an apple is my favourite fruit. So studies have shown with more levels of processing and deeper levels of meaning, memories have become much easier to retain. Another memory phenomena is picture superiority effect. Now, that is it's a pretty simple concept. We just have better memories for pictures and images rather than the typed word. The reasoning behind this, recent studies have shown that it's quicker for us to process an image than the actual written word. So the time between processing an image and the time processing a word, it's the same amount of time, but because it's quicker to do both, you can actually add more meaning and more levels of processing within that time for the image compared to the written word. Now, another memory phenomenon which is incredibly important to passwords is forgetting. That is the apparent loss of information stored in the long-term memory that's already been encoded into long-term memory. Now, there's two types of forgetting. There's decay and interference. Now, decay is a theory that proposes that memories fade and get weaker just because of the passage of time. As time goes on, they just start to fade if they're not reused or recalled often. Excuse me. Interference theory defines the phenomena of retrieving memories, which is interrupted or impeded on by other similar memories. So as you try and remember one memory, you bring another memory to the foreground. So has anyone ever thought, oh my gosh, I've lost my keys, I put them in my left-hand pocket, but actually you put them in your right-hand pocket, but you just remembered that yesterday you put them in your left-hand pocket. So a similar memory can impede on when you're retrieving a memory. So the effects of human memory on password selection. Let's think back to what makes a password strong. So we've got length, complexity, and expiration period. Now, let's think about what we've learned about the memory and how it can make a password stronger. So there's a trade-off between secure passwords and memorable passwords. Sasser et al. In 2001 noted that security experts believed it was humanly impossible to remember a secure password. Now, their research led them to disagree with that, but I'll discuss that in a minute. But the general consensus is that strong passwords are hard to remember, and weak passwords are easy to remember. And the reason for that is when you think about it, a longer password, there's more to learn. A more complex password quite often refers to it having more more levels of, if it's more complex, it's going to be harder to remember because it may not have it will have less meaning to it. Therefore, complex passwords are written down and simpler passwords are preferred. The expiration period. Now, we're supposed to change our passwords regularly. Not many people do. And when they do, they select weaker passwords. One of the reasons why people don't like changing their passwords is the interference effect. As many times that you may have had this yourself, you've changed your password and you can't remember it because you can only remember your old one. So, but as I've mentioned regarding password behaviour and cracking, if a password contains a word, it's going to be easier to crack. But so random, meaningless passwords are harder to remember. But are they? Well, this is the thing. Sasser et al., when they did their research, they found that just because a password's random, it does and complex, it doesn't mean that it's any less meaningless. I mean, meaning is dependent on the user. I could have a selection of random letters and numbers, and that could have some personal meaning to me. It might not be to you or anyone else, but it's personal to me, and that's what helps with memory. So, going on to mental effort, we all exert a certain level of mental effort when encoding and in creating and recalling, and even when we're changing our passwords. And this can lead to frustration as it's a distraction from our work and from our leisure. I mean, how many times have you gone to book a holiday and then they want you to create an account, make a password and so forth? And so it's a distraction. It can be frustrating. And research has shown that mental effort to meet the criteria of password policies and requirements can actually affect the password selection. So, multiple passwords are becoming a big issue. The amount of them are growing because of the amount of internet usage is growing. Research has shown that on average a user may have as many as 10 passwords and possibly even more. And it's a real big issue because we are solely responsible for our passwords. And guidance when we are creating our passwords is only guidance for creating that one password. There's nothing for multiple passwords. Within organisations, they don't incorporate the fact that we have more than one password. And when they're giving training and advice, again, it's for one password, not multiple passwords. And they don't make allowances for cognitive offloading, such as writing down passwords. This leads to the way that some policies, information system policies, or security policies aren't successful because, again, they don't incorporate an understanding of the user's tasks and their psychological processes in password management. So that has become an issue. Another issue that is big with multiple passwords is, as I've mentioned a few times now, is interference. As you, as new and old passwords impede and disrupt when you try and recall your passwords. Research has also shown that if a user has 8 passwords, on average, only 4.5 of them will be unique. Now, it's important to have unique passwords for every single account you have. However, so many times users now don't actually do that. They reuse or modify their passwords. And this is an increasing problem as well, because what people do is that they crack a password on a low security site, and then if you've reused it for like another account, they can actually go to a high security site and then hack that account there. So you could have used the same password for, say, I don't know, your gaming, and someone can access it there, and then they can only just reuse it or modify it to access your banking account. So it's a very big reuse and modification is a big issue. Now, looking at the effects of policy. Now, password policies, as I've said, complexity, length, and expiration period. Those are the three main things that they all require. What policy does is that it encourages users to create weaker passwords as people try to meet the criteria of when they're creating their passwords. So they choose quite often the bare minimum. Add to the fact that the user has to change the password, which is also quite often, which is a part of the policy, it adds a level of frustration as people try and meet the criteria and find it very difficult to do so. So again, as I've said, policies can be unsuccessful because they don't incorporate an understanding of the cognitive processes involved with password management. And therefore, IS security policies can be often unrealistic and also impractical. So, what makes a password more memorable? Now, the research has suggested that self-generated passwords. The reason is because it uses the generation effect. As I've said, if you do it in your head, rather than if it's presented to you, you're going to actually probably remember it more. Using personal and meaningful information, not biographical information, to create your passwords increases the depth of meaning and also level of processing. Mnemonic passwords. Now, mnemonics is a learning technique to aid information retention by ordering it in such a way that it's easier to retrieve. An example of this, an acronym for the North American Great Lakes, is HOMES. So you've got the Huron, the Ontario, the Michigan, the Erie, and the Superior. Now, using this technique to create passwords makes a password more secure as it's random, but it doesn't actually make it harder to recall. Now, another thing that makes passwords more memorable is pictures and images, and they're being brought in on many password types. It makes the password, makes the memory of the password stronger, because we have it utilizes the picture superiority effect. And another factor that makes password more memorable is frequently entering your password. So it reinforces the memory, so there's less chance of the memory decaying and therefore wearing away through the passage of time. So based on memory theories and research and memory phenomena, researchers have looked at different types of password that are more memorable. I'm going to start by just looking at the alphanumeric password. Here we've got a combination of letters, numbers, and symbols. Now, Can anyone say what's good about this password? Here? Does anyone want to say what they think's good? What's good about this password? Okay, well, it's got a combination of uppercase and lowercase, numbers and symbols. That's what makes it good. But what makes it bad? Anyone want to suggest? Well, it uses a word. And because of dictionary attacks, words are really easy to crack. And also, it's the most popular word for passwords. So again, don't use that one, it's not good. But that's just that's an example, obviously. I don't use that password. So that's the alphanumeric passwords. We have also mnemonic phrases, as I said, using the mnemonic techniques to create a password to help aid retention. Now, I've used this phrase here, there's no place like home, and that's the password I've come up with that. Can everyone see how this has become that password at the end, yeah? Okay, that's using mnemonic techniques. The advantages are that it's as easy as a word, as just a word to remember. It's more secure because it's random. There's no actual words within that password there. So a dictionary attack would not be able to crack that easily. The other great thing is about mnemonics and mnemonic passwords is that it's no harder to recall than just dictionary passwords. The only disadvantages are that there's initial login failures. People or users forget, sometimes they forget how they have made the phrase into the password. So they forget if they've put, say, the comma and maybe changed that to a letter and such. But it's still a much easier password in terms of type to remember. Now, DrawASecret and PassDoodle. Now, these are already being used in some devices now. The advantages are that basically what it is that you draw like a little doodle or a little drawing onto a grid. The advantages are that it utilises the picture superiority effect. The disadvantages are that trying to remember the stroke order, people forget how they actually created their picture. And also, researchers have found that users are really interested in other people's drawings and therefore forget their own through interference from other people's images. Now, graphical passwords. There are many different types, and they all have the same advantage, and that is that they utilise, the picture superiority effect. Bless you. Passfaces is one of them. Basically, you select the face and you log in. Now, the disadvantage of this is that it's not practical, as it isn't. It doesn't make it secure enough because you'd have to go through several rounds of faces to actually make it secure. So it is therefore easily cracked. Another type is passpoints. Basically, I don't know if you can see from the picture here, but there are several different points on this picture. Now, what you have to do is you click on the individual points in a certain order. Now, the disadvantages are that it takes longer to input. It's a real problem if you're doing it on a small device. I mean, if you have got large fingers, you're trying to get every individual point, you're going to actually not be able to do it very well. It's harder to learn as well, and it actually has the same recall value as alphanumeric passwords. So it's no more memorable than alphanumeric passwords. Now, ImagePass was used in 2011. Basically, you click on, in a specific order, five pictures to log in. Now, researchers originally started off with abstract pictures, but because there was no meaning to these abstract pictures, people found it incredibly difficult to learn. So they changed it to more common everyday objects, and what they found was that the images that used everyday objects, they added more meaning and therefore were much more memorable. This type of password was much more memorable to than alphanumeric passwords. Now, Nelson and Vu in 2010, they looked at two different types of password and combined it, and looked at generating passwords using image-based mnemonic techniques. They said it would be more feasible for people to use pictures or imagery to cue associated alphanumeric passwords. So what they did was they used pictures to generate alphanumeric mnemonic passwords. This is an example I've used here. Say film Taxi Driver, so you've got the picture. So that's the film Taxi Driver. Robert De Niro is, say, the main character, and his phrase is, "You talking to me." So I don't know if you can see this, but I've created this password from that picture. So Robert De Niro, you talking to me. So what they did was that they used the image when generating, but only in the generation stage. And what they found was that the mnemonic techniques during the password generation stage improved memory for passwords by adding meaning, and also by using the image based mnemonic techniques made it more effective than just text based mnemonics. But overall, passwords that were generated in the mnemonic groups were not only longer, but they were more complex. So that's just some of the research, this is just an overall, some of the research involved in password security at the moment. They use different methodologies, quantitative and qualitative data analysis, in testing memorability of passwords, so say generating and learning recalling passwords, and also memory techniques. They also, under quantitative data analysis, they also measure questionnaire responses looking at attitudes towards passwords and security and perceived passwords and security behaviours. Under qualitative data analysis, researchers have also analysed interviews measuring security attitudes and behaviours. And diary studies have been employed to observe password behaviours in a more naturalistic environment. Bear with me. So, in conclusion, let's see what time it is. Yeah, in conclusion, a rise in internet usage has led to an increase in the number of passwords we use. And this pushes our memory to put so much demand on our memory and pushes it to its limits. So, that leads to an adoption of poor password behaviour, and that ultimately undermines the whole mechanism. Currently, there's no reliable alternative to passwords, so making sure that they're more secure in the future is paramount. Poor password behaviour can be attributed to a lack of user knowledge and understanding in the importance and sensitivity of the data that's being protected, and also a lack of knowledge and understanding in security awareness. It can also be attributed to users' memory, so the human memory affects the password selection and security itself. And therefore, understanding how the memory works can be utilised to not only make the password more secure, but it also can affect the selection as well. Both quantitative and qualitative research methodology is employed in password security research. But what of the future of passwords? How are we going to make passwords more secure in the future? And what of password security research? The future of making passwords more secure. Now, so many factors can affect and influence password behaviour and selection. And even though making a password completely secure is ultimately impossible, passwords are still considered to be the feature of security. So we can't change the fact that the issue with password security is ourselves. So we have to change ourselves. So how do we change ourselves? Well, we should provide more training and education to home users and within corporations in memory techniques and creating stronger passwords. We also need to provide more security awareness, maybe publicity awareness and campaigns, again for home users and also in corporations. We also need to develop more realistic security policies that incorporate an understanding of memory capabilities and the psychological processes and behaviours that follow. Now, the future of password research. Now, there's been a growth in mobile devices, obviously, in the past few years, and researching the link between these devices and passwords and the effects that they have on each other is one route of research that should be more developed. And secondly, we need to look more closely at understanding passwords and also understanding the human capabilities and our memory capabilities. And then at that point that we can then develop better and stronger passwords and also incorporate these understandings in developing policies that are realistic and also practical. So thank you very much for listening. Have you got any questions?
Why there are not more of those applications or sites where the where it forces the user to change his or her password more often?
Sorry, say that again.
Why are there not that kind of applications or sites which forces the user to change his or her password more often?
I think the reason behind that is that even though it's well known that if you obviously you have to change your password on a personal level, you have to change your password, I think that websites they don't want people to do that as such because they want people to return to their website. Now, if you have to keep changing your password, people are going to get frustrated with that and they're going to go, nah, I'm going to go somewhere else. So I think it's just down to popularity and wanting people to use their websites. Any other questions?
How about the use of these files that are encrypted and you only need one master password to access all your other passwords? Because I've been myself using those and
yeah.
It allows me to put really complicated passwords to everywhere I use.
Yes.
I just have to remember the one to access everything.
How
most reliable.
Well, how do you find using them? I haven't used them myself, so how do you find using them?
Well, I think it's a risk that everything is behind one password, but
mm-hmm.
it also allows me to make it more complicated when it's
yeah.
the one I have to remember.
Yeah.
But I'm also worried about the encryptions because they are unknown to me.
Yeah.
How hard it is to crack those.
Yeah, well, as far as I'm aware, obviously encryption is more secure, but I can't personally say if they are crackable or not. It depends on what type of password you're using. When you say that you have to use a longer password, you mentioned earlier that you possibly use a lot of words together. Now, that is going to be easily cracked. If you have one word or two words, it doesn't matter. Dictionary attacks, they go through, as I understand, because I'm not a computer person, they go through the software just go through all possible words. And so if you've got a very long password with a lot of words in it, it's obviously going to be harder to crack because it's longer, but if it's going to be words, it's going to be still easier to crack. Now, the actual the single sign-on technology, as I understand it, it's a pretty pretty secure technology, but as I've said, it's got its downsides. And I mean, I personally would If it was me, I would personally prefer to have separate passwords. But that's, I mean, it's just because you are in charge, your sole responsibility is you. So if something goes wrong with, say, the technology, you can't access everything you need to. And if it's attacked, it's someone else's fault, and I prefer to be in charge of that, you know? But that's my personal... But I couldn't say if it's more secure or not more secure, but... Any other? Oh, but I would say change your password. Don't make it a load of words. Use mnemonic.
Combination, yeah.
Well, yeah. Just use mnemonic technique.
Yeah.
Just change it. So, and you can also, what you can do is instead of writing down your password, which obviously don't do, but you can write down the rule in which. If I show you, hold on. Where did I put it? Where is it gone? Yeah. So, say for instance, you said there's no place like home. Now, to remember that you used a capital T and a comma and an S and an N and all that sort of thing, you can possibly write down the rules in which you're employing to actually create that password based on that technique. So, that's just one way of helping you to remember such a long phrase, and then you get the longer password. Okay? Is there any other questions? No? Well, thank you very much. Thank you. Well done.